Hello, this is Howard Husick, Vice President for Policy Research at the Manhattan Institute, and I'm here with Gilbert Metcalf, the author of a new paper, Financing a National Transmission Grid, What Are the Issues? It explores how could a national electricity grid, expanded and extended, be financed so that the advantages of such a grid, economically and in terms of reliability, could be realized. Let me start off, Professor Metcalf, from Tufts University, I should add, in the National Bureau of Economic Research. A lot of Americans would be surprised to learn, I think, that we don't already have a national grid to transmit electricity. Do we not have one?
Well, we do have a national transmission grid. It is literally a grid, a crisscrossing of wires that are range from very low voltage lines that are in local regions to very high voltage lines, 765 kilovolt lines that stretch across the Midlands of the country and down from Canada. So we have the transmission grid in place. I think the real issue that we're talking about is what is the purposeful way we're going to move forward in the 21st century to expand that grid, to make it more reliable, and to integrate renewable electricity that we will be needing if we want to make inroads in reducing our reliance on fossil fuels.
And when you say linking the grid to renewable energy, why would that be hard?
It's hard for two reasons. The first reason is that much renewable electricity, wind and solar in particular, is of intermittent quality, meaning that it's only available when the wind is blowing or the sun is shining. And that intermittency means is that we need to have diversified sources of power so that when the wind is not blowing in Idaho, it is blowing in Colorado, and so we can smooth out the differences among the sources. And to do that, we need a well-integrated grid. That's the first piece. The second piece is that the best places to source wind and solar are in places like the mountain states, the plain states, the Southwest, areas where the solar and wind potential is high, but the population and demand centers are low. So we need to move the power from where it's most efficient to produce it to where the demand is. And, of course, that's in the major cities on the coast and in the Mississippi Valley.
So the new power sources might be distant from the sources of power demand.
Absolutely.
Now, this sounds like a project, if it is one project, obviously it's many lines over many years. I think by one estimate from the Brattle Group consulting firm in Cambridge, Mass., we may need to invest up to $300 billion to modernize and extend the grid. But this sounds like a project with such public purpose that Americans might expect that it would be a publicly built or publicly financed, government-supported project. Do we have to think about it in that kind of way?
Well, it is certainly a project that has national benefits that extend beyond individual states. But like many publicly provided goods, we should draw a distinction between the public nature of the good and the way that we finance that good. We have traditionally financed transmission and distribution grid investment through our payments for electricity. I estimate in the paper that the cost of doing the investments that we need over the next decade alone really are not that expensive. The Brattle numbers are certainly accurate, but when you compare that to the total cost of electricity, the grid costs are on the order of 5 to 10% of the total cost. So there's no reason we can't fold this into electricity bills. That's what we've historically done. That's what we can do moving forward.
In other words, this is financeable privately, because there's a revenue stream that's attached to the provision of electricity.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's think about, and this is really the heart of the Financing National Transmission Grid paper that you've written for us. What are the options in terms of how it might be financed? Because when you talk about a 5 or 10% ratio compared to the overall cost of electricity, certainly individual households and ratepayers may still be concerned about increases. What are the ways in which investors will be drawn in, on what terms, to finance improvements and extension to the grid?
So first off, let me just emphasize that we are constantly making these investments in the grid. One of the issues, of course, is that we're not investing perhaps as much as we'd like. Looking back over the past number of five-year planning periods, we've been investing on the order of 6,000 circuit miles a year. Looking forward, the estimates are that we need about 16,000 miles over the next 5 years. So we simply need to ramp up the investment. But already in our, and the point of that is simply that already in our electricity bills, we are paying for grid investment. We need to do more, but it's not like all of a sudden we're going to get hit with a big new charge that's unexpected. Now, in terms of how we do it, there are a number of ways. And I think a centerpiece of how we should do this is through an approach called transmission congestion charging. And that's a complicated way of saying that we will charge users for electricity based on the marginal cost of electricity, which might be 8 cents per kilowatt hour. But we then will look around and look at all of the generators who are offering to supply electricity at that moment, and they're all putting in bids for what they're willing to accept, and those bids may range from 3 cents to 5 cents to what the marginal cost is, which will be the highest number, which is perhaps 8 cents. And then the system operator chooses which power to use and then pays each of those generators what they bid. Now, here's the key piece. If there were absolutely no congestion on transmission lines, if we had more than enough transmission lines for electricity, then all electricity would be provided by the lowest cost generators. But once you add the constraint that the lines become congested, and by congested we mean if we try to put more electricity down them, we get a blackout, then we have to shift away from low cost to high cost generators. Now, what does that mean? That means that I pay 8 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity, but when you take that 8 cents, a portion of that, maybe 3 cents, goes to one of the generators, and there's going to be a margin in between. There's a difference between the 8 cents and 3 cents. There's some money in between that can go to the owners of the transmission grid as a payment to finance the grid and as a payment to incentivize them to expand the grid when it's appropriate to do so.
So this is a very, very key concept, and it's really the centerpiece of your paper. And so walk us through, what would it be like if Con Ed here in New York was trying to deal with an air conditioning spike in the summer, and it needed to bring more power in, and somehow some of the money it was willing to pay for that additional power to avoid a blackout were to go to an owner of a high-voltage transmission line? How would that owner actually get that money?
So let's imagine that in the absence of the spike, Con Ed is getting its power from a nuclear power plant upstate, and maybe it's paying 3 cents a kilowatt hour. And so that's what the price of electricity is until the spike occurs. Now we have a hot day, people turn their air conditioners on, and we like to take more electricity from that nuclear power plant, and the nuclear power plant would be happy to provide it, but the problem is we have a bottleneck in transmission from upstate New York. So we can't buy the power from that nuclear power plant. So we buy it from some natural gas plants to get turned on Long Island and in New Jersey, and that electricity costs 8 cents. Well, Con Ed is charged by the system operator. It gets charged 8 cents for all of the electricity it buys. But some of that electricity is still coming from that nuclear power plant upstate, as much as we can send down that transmission line before it gets congested. So we've got this difference. Con Ed's paying 8 cents for some electricity that is coming from the nuclear power plant, which is only being paid 3 cents. And the difference, the 5 cent difference, is where we come up with the money for the grid owner.
Right. So if I'm an investor in potential new high-voltage transmission elements of the grid, I look to areas of high demand and say, if I could feed my line there, I might be able to capitalize on exactly that kind of price difference that you just described.
Exactly.
Right.
And the beauty of that is it provides a market signal to investors to build, just as you describe, and it also provides a signal to consumers to reduce their demand, if possible, because they're paying the high price for electricity.
Quickly, will that be the way that we finance all of our grid investments?
Well, in an ideal world, you can prove mathematically that, yes, we could finance 100% through transmission congestion charges. In the real world, with the imperfections that actually exist in grids and with all the other issues, it turns out you can finance about 20, 25, maybe 30% of the grid through congestion charging. So you're going to need another source of funding on top of that.
And some of that is, as you allude to in the paper, you talk about cost socialization, where all ratepayers have to pay a little bit more, and some variations on that.
So the two big approaches that are under discussion, and FERC is talking about this as we speak.
And FERC is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which has its hand in this area.
Absolutely, at the federal level. So we can do what's called socializing the cost, or using a postage stamp model, which is basically we just spread the cost uniformly among all users in the system.
Socializing doesn't mean that the government takes over Con Ed, right?
No, it just simply means that we're like a head tax. Everyone gets charged the same amount.
Right.
And the other approach is a beneficiaries pay approach, which is that we try to identify who are the beneficiaries of new investment in transmission capacity, and we allocate the cost to them. And that is the approach that FERC is taking, that they are recommending that as much as possible, states and regional planning groups take a beneficiaries pay approach.
It's a complex, relatively complex mix, but the overarching unifying theme of all of the options that you identify is that private finance can be lured into this field that brings with it public benefits.
Not only can they be lured, they're already there.
Even better. Well, thank you very much, Professor Gilbert Metcalf, Tufts University, National Bureau of Economic Research, and the author of the new Manhattan Institute paper, Financing a National Transmission Grid, What Are the Issues? You can find it at the Center for Energy Policy and the Environment website of the Manhattan Institute, www.manhattan-institute.org. Thank you so much, Professor Metcalf.
You're welcome.